106 LTV and new owner, tax map department, versus Commissioner, General Services, Mr. Coleman, and Mr. Pettis, Mr. Baker, and Mr. Dooley.
With the court's permission, Kyle Coleman for appellant, 106 Limited.
Morning, Mr. Coleman.
Morning. This is an appeal from the United States Tax Court, Judge Mark V. Holmes presiding. The sole issue at trial was whether the partnership, 106 Limited, was liable for a penalty under IRC Section 6662 for negligence. At trial, the partnership argued it was not liable for the penalty because it reasonably relied on professionals. Mr. Palmlin, the owner of 106 Limited, relied on his tax counsel of over 20 years, Mr. Garza. He also relied on his CPAs of over 18 years, Mr. Turner and Mr. Stone. The test for reasonable reliance is clear. It's a three-part test. First part of the test is that the tax professionals must be competent. Second part of the test is must be given all the information necessary to prepare the return. And the third part of the test is the taxpayer must reasonably rely in good faith on the tax professional. The tax court found that the first two parts of the test had been met. However, Judge Holmes found that both Mr. Garza and Turner and Stone were promoters of the transaction, and it wasn't reasonable to rely on them because they had an inherent conflict of interest. On appeal, we're arguing that it was reasonable to rely on both Garza and Turner and Stone, primarily because they were such trusted and long-term advisors. We also argue that as a matter of law, the tax court used the wrong legal standard and definition of promoter in this case. The tax court formulated its test for who is a promoter.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, Your Honor.
Would it be reasonable if you believe that the tax strategy of the deal was intended to lose money?
If the transaction was intended to lose money from the get-go?
Yeah.
That would not be a favorable fact, Your Honor.
Wouldn't that be enough by itself to establish that you didn't do this in good faith?
Well, there is precedent, especially in the Fifth Circuit, that if you reasonably rely on counsel,
but if
that
you
even
know
the profit motive is not necessary.
If you know that the deal is going to lose money, in what way could counsel's assurance make you think that it was reasonable?
Well, there was testimony that when the transaction was entered into, Your Honor, that it was done for profit.
Yes, but there was also testimony from your client's private banker that your client told him that he had entered into the tax strategy with the intent to lose money, right?
That was done at a casual lunch
just
dinner.
Just hold one thing at a time. That was the testimony.
That was the testimony.
The tax court found it credible, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, the tax court did. We submit that the testimony from Mr. Palmlin during the trial and supported by other witnesses supported that the initial transaction was entered into for profit and was carefully explained that it had a significant chance of a, you know, one-third doubling your money. And this transaction actually did result in a profit.
What was the explanation with respect to what he told his private banker?
Your Honor, I wasn't trial counsel at the case.
Well, what's your position now?
And it wasn't rebutted at trial. Our position is that there was testimony from Mr. Palmlin that he intended to make a profit on this transaction.
You're not challenging the testimony of the private banker.
We didn't challenge it at trial, Your Honor. I can't challenge it.
So I'm just trying to figure out what I have to think about now. So we have on the record unchallenged, credible testimony that he told his banker that the purpose was to lose money. And what do you want me to weigh against that?
Well, Your Honor, what we're arguing is that de novo, the wrong test was used to determine whether there were promoters. That was the largest part of the tax court's decision. We think this is an important issue. There are numerous other cases that have this very same issue, and
Well, even with that issue, how could he good faith rely on them if he understood that the purpose of the deal was to lose money? I don't understand how that could be reasonable reliance.
Well, Your Honor, the testimony at trial from Mr. Pallman was contradictory to that.
But you realize that that puts us in a pretty tough position, or puts you in a tough position with respect to our appellate standard. This is a clear error standard with respect to finding a fact, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Well, the totality of the partnership's life began with a transaction in which the base apparently was overstated. I understand that that's not something you want to admit, but that's the fact, isn't it?
Well, we would argue at the time, Your Honor, that the other half of the transaction was a contingent liability.
It was a wash transaction, and the partnership was set up recognizing as the base the high side, if you would, of the wash transaction.
That's correct.
It's a standard son of boss tax shelter, right?
It's a standard son of boss transaction, Your Honor, and the facts are a little different in this case.
They're a little different every time I see it, but they're essentially the same.
Well, this taxpayer, you know, he relied on his counsel of longstanding to enter into the transaction.
How many of these shelters had that counsel set up?
I know of probably 15.
But he's not a promoter or?
I would have a hard time arguing, Your Honor, candidly, that he's not a promoter.
All right. Once he's a promoter, can there be reasonable reliance?
I would say there wouldn't be reasonable reliance on that promoter, Your Honor, but there were also two CPAs that were involved in this case.
Okay.
And these are, again, CPAs of long standing. The taxpayer, after being presented with this transaction by Mr. Garza, himself, Mr. Pallman, approached his CPAs. His CPAs stated that they were familiar with the transaction and went so far as one of the CPAs to say he had performed the transaction himself. It was unsolicited advice that he went to, you know, his CPAs for. We argue that there's a separate cause for finding reasonable reliance on the CPAs. As to the test used by the tax court, we suggest that it's improper for three basic reasons. First, it is purely an objective test that's looking with hindsight at a transaction that has occurred more than 10 years ago. It's easy to look, you know, back from hindsight, but the key question and the key issue is, what did Mr. Pallman know when he's sitting across the desk from, you know, his tax professionals?
He didn't know that his attorney had set up multiple shelters like this, didn't he?
Mr. Pallman?
Yeah.
I don't believe there's evidence to that effect.
I thought there was, but I could be mistaken.
I don't believe there was, Your Honor. We also have a problem with the tax court's test. It's very broad, and it focuses on if you had anything to do with setting up the transaction, related to the transaction, or you're going to make a profit from the transaction. First, the court, in its opinion, says Tiger's Eye test should apply to cases like this one. Well, cases like this one, is the tax court suggesting that this type of test should be applied for listed transaction or tax shelter cases? You know, there's several limitations on listed transactions. They can subject a taxpayer to additional penalties. They can subject a taxpayer to record-keeping requirements. Here, we argue the tax court is creating a test specifically for listed transactions, and we suggest that's the province of Congress. And second, another problem we have with this Tiger's Eye test is it applies to any person that makes a profit associated with the transaction. Unless the tax professional is operating pro bono, there's always going to be a profit involved. And
not in connection with the transaction. If the test was being applied with reference to the advisor, Right. The reasonable reliance is where we are in the issue.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the tax court is saying you can't reasonably rely where you have an interested party as the advisor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Typically, your advisor is not making a profit out of the transaction if you get reasonable reliance. He's making his profit out of whatever fee you're paying him to give the advice.
If it's your certified public accountant and he's preparing your tax return,
mm-hmm.
and his advice is going into that return, his normal profit is going to be, you know, what he makes on the returns.
His profit is going to be what the receiver of the information pays him for performing that service. He's not giving the advice with reference to a transaction and getting money in or out of the transaction itself. And I think that's what the court was referring to here, isn't it? That Garza and perhaps others were making money out of Son of Boss Shelters.
I would agree that that would probably be true with Mr. Garza, but I don't believe that would be true with the CPAs, Turner and Stone.
Isn't there testimony that they worked on the deal before and that they then charged him in part for their prior work?
I thought that was
the testimony at trial was that Turner and Stone had worked on a Jenkins and Gilchrist transaction and that they had charged $17,000 related to that transaction but cut their billing rate and spread it in part among
other clients, including this one.
Yes, Your Honor.
And he knew that?
Mr. Pollan was not aware of that.
So they were promoters, but he didn't know? Is that?
Well, you have to look again at a subjective test, Your Honor. For example, what if Mr. Garza had paid Turner and Stone a referral fee or a kickback, and that comes out later during trial? Does that mean that Mr. Pomlin, when he's sitting across from his table, should know or be put on notice that his tax advisor is not without conflict?
Okay, I think your time is up. We'll hear from the government.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court, Patrick Erda for the Commissioner of Internal Revenue. Your Honors, the tax court did not clearly err when it found that the partnership did not have reasonable cause and good faith. Judge Garland, going to your question at the beginning of opposing counsel's oral argument.
Before you do that, could you get to my question at the end of his closing argument? Okay. Did he know that he was being billed for another transaction?
I'm not sure if he knew that he was being, that was the bill breakdown. However, JA-194 is the fee breakdown between Turner and Stone and Garza. So he did know that Turner and Stone was part of a package deal with Garza. Furthermore, Garza testified at trial at, and this is at JA-259, that he had set up numerous previous tax shelters and that he had done previous transactions with Turner and Stone. So this can't be a case where Pomlin can plead ignorance of Turner and Stone's involvement in these types of shelters. Now, turning first to reasonable reliance, the standard for reliance on another to be considered reasonable cause and good faith is it must be objectively reasonable. And there was no objectively reasonable reliance here because, as you pointed out, Your Honors, Pomlin knew or should have known that these were promoters. And, of course, as you pointed out, Chief Judge Sentell, they had an inherent conflict of interest based on the fees. They were getting fees only if Pomlin went through with the transaction, which he did. So it wasn't the case of a simple hourly fee like in Countryside. This was a case where, quite frankly, they were interested parties. They would only get paid if they convinced Pomlin to go forth with the transaction, and a sophisticated businessman like Pomlin knew or should have known that based on representations of Garza and Turner and Stone, especially considering that Garza and Turner and Stone admitted that they had been involved in these transactions. Moreover, the opinion letter, and remember, there was no opinion letter by Turner and Stone. The only advice here was given by Garza. And Garza's opinion letter, as the task court detailed, had a number of inaccuracies.
Just pause over that. So what does he say he relied on with respect to the accounting firm?
You know, it's unclear. He merely states that he consulted with Turner and Stone, but
testimony about what they said to him or anything?
You know, there was some testimony, but it was pretty vague. One of the principals of the accounting firm thought that he actually talked to it was his normal course of practice to talk to people who are approaching the tax shelter about the IRS notice that explicitly states that there's a good chance of audit and maybe penalties, IRS notice 2044. So it's also in the tax court testimony that the representatives of Turner and Stone did talk to him about doing previous transactions, and at least one of them stated that personally he had done a son of boss tax shelter. So I think that that's the testimony, but it's unclear what exactly advice Palmlin is relying upon when he states that he relied upon Turner and Stone, and that's because the tax opinion letter that was part of the transaction came from Garza. And the Treasury regulation is completely clear that advice can't be based on unreasonable fact or legal assumptions unreasonably rely on representations that a taxpayer know or should have known to be untrue. Here, as the tax court found, there were several, including that there was a reasonable opportunity for profit. And finally, Judge Garland, the Treasury regulation explicitly states reliance on the advice of a professional tax advisor does not necessarily demonstrate reasonable cause in good faith. In this case, Palmlin was a sophisticated individual, and he knew or should have known that this was a tax shelter and that the benefits were too good to be true.
But there's no question that reliance can be reasonable and good faith, right?
That's completely right, Your Honor. However,
there's no really dispute about this. It's either this reliance was reasonable and good faith or it wasn't.
Well, I think that's true generally, Judge, but I also think that even if you do rely in some instances, when you have benefits that are just too unbelievable. Here he paid $72,000 in fees and was receiving $3 million in tax benefits, as you said at the beginning. That should strike a sophisticated businessman as too good to be true, which is precisely what the tax court held. If there are no further questions, I'll relinquish the remainder of my time.
Thank you, counsel. You had no time left. We'll give you back 2 minutes for rebuttal if you need it.
Just note that the exhibits reference J-194, that's Mr. Garza's invoice. That has nothing to do with the invoices from Turner and Stone. Also, the exhibit 259, that's a transcript. That transcript shows that Turner and Stone informed Mr. Palmlin that Mr. Turner himself had done the transaction. Now, you've got Mr. Palmlin, the tax court found him to be a sophisticated individual. He was originally approached with this transaction in early 2001. It was described to him. He declined to participate. It was later in the year when he was at a social event where he heard his friends at the country club talking about this foreign currency transaction that they have been doing with other big law firms and accounting firms around Dallas. At that point, he went back to Mr. Garza and, you know, got more information. Please describe this transaction to me. And it was at that point that he went to Turner and Stone. Now, and I still think
Did you say Turner had done this same transaction himself?
He had done it himself, Your Honor.
Is that evidence that he's a promoter?
Well, that's evidence, I believe, that he felt very strongly that the transaction was legal and would withstand IRS scrutiny. And also, Mr. Garza went to the extraordinary effort of signing on his fee agreement that if the IRS were to question the transaction and it would not be sustained, that he would refund his fees. That gave Mr. Palmlin greater assurance.
He insisted on that, didn't he?
It was handwritten on the invoice. And he testified that he had never had an attorney agree to guarantee his fees. Thank the court for its time.
Perhaps that was because he was suspicious. Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted. Now, the next case will...